I thought, how can you do a whole book on one game? But you not only do it, you make it interesting. It read like a thriller at times. And I knew the outcome.
Yeah, the tough part of that is the book. I mean, the game is the focal point. I mean, that's where the book leads to. But there's two stories that lead, or even really three, but there's two stories that lead to the book. You have, I always was curious, okay, so it's the greatest game, but you know what? What made it the greatest game? Why was there so much buildup? Why was there so much hype? And when you start getting into those types of questions, you got to go back and go, well, how do this group of people from Moscow and the Soviet Union and this group of people on the other side of the world, the Montreal Canadiens, how do they come to a status point of where each of them represents the best in their sport, and then how do they get to where they meet each other? And I thought that was a story that would be interesting, and then that also builds into the hype of the game. And you get to the game and all of a sudden, okay, all these people now, you know, coalesce together that had been so far apart. And part of that's because at the time we had the Cold War, and you know, Moscow and Russia, they seem like they're from another planet. Today, of course, it's different. We have satellite TV, you tune on CNN or Fox News and live in Moscow. Well, that didn't happen in 1975. They were separate from us. They weren't like somehow real. And so that lent to it as well. And you didn't have like, you know, video and satellite TV and all these things. So you watched the game and then you saw it. You know, you didn't go and pop it in the VCR to watch it again, or we didn't go over to scout players. It just was told two totally separate entities. And that part of it interested me, and how they come together on this one evening in Montreal. And I thought that's the story, and that gives the game even, you know, it means something to the reader as well.
The subtitle says, "The Night That Saved Hockey." Mm-hmm. And that's your premise. And by the end of the book, I was convinced, because Philadelphia Flyer era was, mm-hmm. it was an ugly version of hockey.
Yeah, and the game took place, I mean, there was, on the one hand, there was the whole Soviet taking over the game and their style. But there was also, at the same point, our game, Canadian hockey, you know, NHL, North America, really had descended into a real period where brutality and bronze seemed to be more of an emphasis than speed and skill. The NHL in 1967 had six teams. This game takes place 7.5 years later. The NHL has 18 teams. Its main competition, the WHA, a rival league, has another 12 teams. And this is in a time where it was still, for the most part, Canadian players playing the game. So there was too many teams and not enough players. So what's easier to find, a guy who can fight and be a goon, or a guy who's a really good hockey player? And that's what happened, is that the fighting became more prominent, and it was like roller derby or car crashes, right? Like, people are coming to the rink to see the fights.
To see blood, literally.
To see blood, literally. And the Broad Street Bullies, the Philadelphia Flyers, were the Stanley Cup champions at the time. They'd won two Stanley Cups in a row. And of course, whoever wins the Stanley Cup is the team that everybody else copies. So you started seeing that, not only just throughout the NHL, but into junior hockey and kids leagues, this whole thought of, you know, fighting and dropping the gloves. And it was really turning into, well, it became an issue even politically, with the province of Ontario stepping in, and really split between, you know, people who thought it was all good old time hockey and those who appreciated the beauty of the game. Where the New Year's Eve game, I think, fits in on all that is Canadian hockey was at a low point, and the Russians were held up as, wow, they play hockey in a beautiful way and the way it should be played. And what the Montreal Canadiens did that night is not only did they outplay the Russians, but they proved that, hey, players who play Canadian hockey are capable of playing at a pretty high level as well, where speed and skill. The game between the two teams didn't feature a single fight. There's very few penalties in it, and even the penalties are just your standard, you know, a trip, or there's no violent cross-checking or high-sticking. It's a very back-and-forth game where, as Peter Mihalovich, one of the Canadians, said, just, you know, it was like the old pond days where we got out in the pond, they threw the puck, and we just went back and forth, and team with most goals wins. And that's what it was. And I think people saw that game and went, well, geez, you know, why can't that be the way it is every night? Why all this other peripheral stuff, the fighting and all that? And I think it marked a turning point, because it also set the Canadians apart. from the rest of the NHL. I mean, here was a team that was playing to the virtues of speed, skill, you know, all those talents. And the Flyers, ultimately, and, you know, they met each other in the Stanley Cup Finals 4 months later, and I detail this in the book, the Canadiens swept them out and basically swept aside that whole era, really receded into the background. We still have fighting today, but it's not as much as it was then. Still have a bit of violent play, but it's more of a sideshow now. You haven't had a team that's effectively used that style come anywhere close to winning a Stanley Cup since those days. And I think that goes into why the game also is, you know, the greatest game.
The book is The Greatest Game, The Montreal Canadiens, The Red Army, and The Night That Saved Hockey. I've been speaking with the author, Todd Deneau, and The Greatest Game, published by McClelland and Stewart.